The following talk was given by Norm Randolph at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on January 9, 2022. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Thank you for coming today. But today I was going to be talking about the Zen teacher Joshu. He's a very famous Zen master in Zen history. Oh, okay, yeah. Is that better? No, that's fine. No, that should be all right, I think. I think so, yeah. So I'll resume my talk about the Zen Master Joshu. he's a very well-known Zen teacher. He's in a lot of the Zen literature. There are many stories about Joshu and many koan stories in which he is featured. Joshu was a great Chinese Zen master who lived more than 1,000 years ago in Tang Dynasty China. There were many other great Zen teachers living at that time in China. And there are many stories about Joshu and other stories about other Chinese Zen masters of his time. And these stories are called koan stories. These stories are pointers to reality and to this way of life. They're not explanations. You don't try and read these koan stories trying to figure them out. That's not a good idea. It's best to let them point you to what your life experience is. And it takes a while before that makes any sense, what these koan stories are about and why we even bother with them. I'm sure that a lot of what I say today won't make much sense either. But anyway, I thought I would bring these out today. So these stories, at first they seem pretty confusing, but the confusion arises from our being caught up in our deeply held and unexamined assumptions about what our life is and what our practice is. We're very deeply rooted ideas and beliefs about what our life is and what we need to do to live our life properly. We have very many deeply rooted assumptions about that, and we live our life based on these deeply rooted assumptions, beliefs, and ideas rather than living our life based on actual direct here and now experience. This is a big problem that we have. We end up ignoring this fundamental reality that is our life and living our life based on our ideas about what our life is. So very naturally we run into confusion. So these stories, these koan stories, help us to see how we ignore or overlook reality by getting caught up in our assumptions. They help us to see how we overlook what we truly are. They help us to see how we live in confused ways and how we can let go of confusion and live as we truly are. These stories were meant to arouse our curiosity about reality and to encourage us to look carefully at actual direct experience. Joshua lived from 778 to 897. He was 120 years old when he died. That's pretty remarkable. He began his practice with the great Zen teacher Nansen when he was 17. And he continued practicing with Nansen until Nansen's death 40 years later. After that, he traveled around visiting other Zen practitioners and teachers. He went in, on a pilgrimage. He wanted to meet with as many Zen teachers and practitioners as he could. And he said that if he met somebody who had something that could help him, he would accept that person's teaching. If he met somebody who needed to hear his teaching, he would offer teaching to that person. He traveled around and met with people and discussed the Dharma with people in a very open attitude and a very generous attitude, trying to deepen his understanding and the understanding of the other person. And Joshua did this for a long time. He did it until he was 80 years old. So then at the age of 80, he settled down and established his own monastery, and he taught there for 40 more years. So he lived at the time when there was a persecution of Buddhism in China. And the monks were not supported, and the monasteries were not supported as they had been in the past. And so they were, the monasteries and the monastic communities were, had to find ways to support themselves that they hadn't had to worry about in the past. So Joshua and his monks frequently had to gather food in the woods, looking for vegetables and greens and berries and nuts. They had to rely a lot on their ability to find food, and because of the lack of support that was existing for monks at that time. Also, the monastery that Joshua was at was in kind of run-down condition. And so they sometimes had to, they tried as best they could to keep the monastery repaired, but sometimes they had to live with rather broken-down conditions where snow would sneak into the monastery. And so when the snow was leaking in one area, sometimes you'd have to go to another part of the monastery. Very, very Spartan, primitive conditions that they had to deal with at this time. And one example of this is Joshua's chair broke, or a leg from his chair broke. And he wouldn't allow it to be fixed by a carpenter, or, you know. So what he did was he just took a piece of partially burned firewood and he stuck it under the chair and nailed it in to make the leg of the chair. Very, very simple, primitive conditions in which he was living. But Joshua didn't mind. He was dedicated to helping others, teaching others, and even though it was a time that was not auspicious for being supported in a convenient way, he went ahead with it and did his best. And Joshua was a very eloquent and skillful teacher. Because of his eloquence, it was said that his lips emitted light. It's kind of, I'm sure it didn't mean literally, it's just, he was very eloquent. That's what that expression refers to. My lips also emit light, but you can't see them because of my mouth. Actually, they don't. Joshua was very skillful in pointing out reality and in teaching about this way of life. A monk once asked Joshua, what is ultimate truth? And the question was worded differently than this, but this was the basic meaning. And Joshua replied, the oak tree in the front garden. The monk didn't like this answer. The monk said to Joshua, don't answer referring to an object. And the monk again asked, what is ultimate truth? And Joshua said, the oak tree in the front garden. The monk who asked the question wanted an explanation of ultimate truth. Instead, Joshua directly pointed out ultimate truth, which is perfectly and completely manifesting. Joshua directly pointed out ultimate truth, which is perfectly and completely manifesting itself as each seemingly separate object. On another occasion, a monk said to Joshua, I'm not carrying anything at all. Joshua said, put it down. A monk said, I just told you I'm not carrying anything at all. And Joshua said, well, keep on carrying it then. The monk proudly thought that he had attained a state of freedom and non-attachment, in which all his, in quotes, baggage was gone. Joshua pointed out that the monk was caught by the idea of, I'm free and unattached. The monk thought, I'm free and unattached. I'm not carrying anything at all. I'm enlightened, awakened, and free. But Joshua pointing out that you're just caught by the idea of that. It's not actually the case that you're free and enlightened and unattached. The monk didn't see this, so Joshua pointed it out again. A person said to Joshua, you are a great teacher, completely enlightened and free. You would never have to fall into hell, would you? And Joshua said, I lead the way. The person was surprised at Joshua's answer, and he asked, you, a great Zen teacher, completely enlightened and free, could fall into hell? And Joshua said, if I didn't go there, who would be there to help you when you go there? So Joshua clearly saw that he was living inseparably from all beings. It was clear to him that his true life was the life of all beings. His practice was to let go of egocentricity and to fully live this life of all beings and to benefit all beings, no matter what the circumstances were. In each moment, in each situation, he tried to offer himself to all beings, no matter how difficult the situation might be. One time, a number of monks came to visit the monastery. Some had been there before, some hadn't. And Joshu said to the monks who came there, he said, "Have you been here before?" And the monk said, "Yes, I have." And then Joshu said, "Have a cup of tea." And another monk came and said, and Joshu said to him, "Have you been here before, to this monastery before?" And the monk said, "No, I have not." So Joshu said, "Have a cup of tea." So whether the monks had been there before or not, Joshu would say, "Have a cup of tea." And the monastery director was looking on at this, and he said, he thought this was kind of strange. He said, "You know, if someone says that he's been here before, you say, 'Have a cup of tea.' If someone says he hasn't been here before, you say, 'Have a cup of tea.'" What's the meaning of this? And Joshu said to the monastery director, he said, "Director, have a cup of tea." One time a monk came to Joshu's monastery and said, "I have just entered the monastery recently. Do you have some instruction for me?" And Joshu said, "Have you had your breakfast?" The monk said, "Yes, I have." And Joshu said, "Wash your bowls." And at that expression, the monk had an enlightenment experience. One time Joshua was asked, "Who is Buddha?" And Joshua responded to the monk who'd asked that question. He said to the monk, "Who are you?" In order to realize who Buddha is, we have to really examine and look carefully at who we are, what our true life is. We have to really investigate that. This is how we can realize Buddha. And Joshua is trying to help the monk realize that. One time Joshua was asked by a monk to describe the ultimate principle of truth. And Joshu said, "I would like to explain that to you, but I have an urgent need to urinate." And then Joshu said, "Isn't that interesting? Even such a mundane activity as that, I must do in person." There's a famous story about a lady who sold tea on the way to Mount Daishan. And Mount Daishan was a place that people traveled to frequently. It was, there were a number of monasteries there. Frequently there would be ceremonies to honor Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. And so many people, especially monks, went to travel to Mount Daishan to go to the ceremonies there. And this old lady sold tea near the road to Mount Daishan. And some of these tea ladies were very wise and wise ladies who studied with Zen teachers. And sometimes they would interact with the monks who came by and bought tea from them. And in some cases, these tea ladies could serve as teachers on the road for the monks who came by and visited their tea stand. So some of these tea ladies were pretty profound, awakened people. But not all of them were. Just some were, some weren't. But this tea lady, when someone would come and ask directions to Mount Taishan, as many monks did, she would say, go straight on. And so the monk would go straight on in the direction she pointed. And the tea lady, the old lady of Mount Daishan, would say, he looks like a fine monk, but there he goes, off like that. She sensed that the person was still caught up in his delusions. He was, even though he looked like a fine monk, he had his robes all in order and his traveling pouch was neatly tied, and he looked like a fine monk, but she seemed to imply that he was not really an awakened person. She offered a kind of a note of criticism about that, and she did this with all the monks that came by there, and some of these were monks who were from Joshu's monastery, and they told Joshu about this old tea lady from Mount Daishan, and they said, and they wondered about her, what's the story with her? Is she one of the awakened tea ladies who is able to be a teacher for monks on the road, or is she just kind of pretending to be a true teacher? Is she just trying to act like a true teacher? Is she able to actually see when someone is caught up in delusion? And Joshu said to his monks, wait here and I will check out the old lady at Mount Taishan for you. Actually, the word check out, I think, could be more accurately translated as see clearly. I will see clearly the old lady of Mount Taishan for you. So Joshua went to where the old lady of Mount Taishan had her tea stand. He asked for directions to Mount Taishan, and the tea lady said, go straight on. And Joshu just went straight on, and the tea lady said, as she had with everybody else, he looks like a fine monk, but there he goes, off like that, implying that he was really kind of caught up in confusion. So Joshu went back to his monastery and said to his monks, I have seen clearly the old woman of Mount Taishan for you. And that's the end of the story. And it seems like the story shouldn't end there. It should go on and say, well, and this is what I found. I found out that she was a true teacher, and she was able to clearly guide people who she met. And she was able to tell when people were caught up in confusion and when they weren't. She was a true teacher. Or Joshu might say, no, she wasn't. She was just kind of trying to act like the true teacher, trying to impress people into thinking she was a true teacher when in fact she really wasn't. She was just an ordinary person who couldn't see very well. But Joshua didn't say that. All he did when he talked to his monsters, he said, "I have seen clearly the old woman of Mount Taishan for you." So the question arises, what did Joshua see? So this is, what did Joshua see? It's said in the commentary on this koan that Joshua clearly saw the old woman. But it should be known that the old woman clearly saw Joshua. We're always clearly seeing. We're always directly experiencing this here now reality, which is our true life. We're always experiencing that. That's what is experienced here and now, each moment. This is what our true life is. This is a life where we're living inseparably from all beings. This is this life that we try to live wholeheartedly. Already this clear seeing is going on, but usually this clear seeing is ignored. Usually we're caught up in our ideas and beliefs about what our life is. And we ignore what is being clearly seen or directly experienced here and now. This is true for everybody. Everybody is clearly seeing. Everybody is realizing this completely clear, obvious, open reality. Everybody is experiencing that, but because we get so caught up in our ideas and beliefs about what our life is and what others' life are and what the nature of reality is, we overlook this directly experienced reality. But the clear seeing is there. It's just, we ignore it. So whether this old woman of Mount Taishan was able to really serve as a teacher for the monks or not isn't the issue. The issue is, what did Joshua see? And what Joshua sees is not an objective seeing. It's a direct experience of what our life is. Everybody is experiencing this. It's just, it's usually overlooked or ignored. There's another one somewhat similar to that. This is a koan called Losing the Mind in Confusion. Joshua said to the assembly, "If you are caught up in discrimination, even a little bit, you lose your mind in confusion. Do you have something to say about this?" He asked his monks, "Do you have something to say about this?" And a monk came up out of the audience of monks and hit Joshu's attendant, who was standing next to Joshu. And he said to Joshu's attendant, "Why don't you answer our teacher?" And Joshu left and went back to his room. The footnote says, enough of this foolishness. Later, Joshu's attendant monk asked Joshu about this and said, "Did the monk who hit me see clearly or did he not?" And Joshu said, "The one who sits sees the one who stands. The one who stands sees the one who sits." This seeing is going on all the time. This direct experience of reality is going on all the time. It's just it's usually ignored. But whether we are engaged in ignoring reality or not, this direct experience is going on. Always this seeing is going on. We never miss out on this. It's not something that can be understood objectively or seen conceptually, but it's right directly experienced now. All beings are directly experiencing this. Those who are standing up, those who are sitting down, those who are confused, those who aren't confused, it's always going on. Our practice is to see and let go of how we get caught up in confusion and ignore our actual direct experience, and to resume the practice of living out this directly experienced reality. So here again, Joshua is pointing to this. This koan is called The Eye That Realizes the Universe. Joshu said, "The eye that realizes the universe is so perceptive that it does not miss even a single thin thread. I want you to see into this. How do you understand it?" And the footnote here says, "The eye that realizes the universe," and about this, the footnote says, "The ten directions cannot contain it." Eye that realizes the universe is this boundless, beginningless, endless, subjectless, objectless reality beyond any idea we can have about it, and is not something that can be objectified. This I is the I of each being. It's their true I. It's what they truly are. And Joshu said, "This I that realizes the universe is so perceptive that it does not miss even a single thin thread." Everything is included in this direct experience. This experience is of totality, wholeness, universal reality, life of all beings. And it's beyond any idea of universality or oneness or totality. It's just this directly experienced reality that is our true life, but which is usually ignored. mask is falling off and my glasses are fogging up. I don't know. Maybe it's time to end this. So Joshi wants these monks to see the end of this, to realize what their true I is, their true life, their true self. What is this? He wants them to see that and to live their life realizing this. Here's some more in the commentary. The eye that realizes the universe is, we should carefully examine Joshu's eye that realizes the universe and see that it is untainted, free of attachment, beyond being and non-being, and not dependent upon intellectual comprehension. This is the true eye of all beings. In realizing what this eye is, it becomes clear that nothing in the universe is hidden. Nothing in the universe is hidden. It's being directly experienced now. It's not being objectively experienced. It's not being understood conceptually, but it's right here now. Everything in the universe is right here now. Joshua wants his monks to see this. And this isn't something to figure out. In the commentary on the koan later on, it says, to think about it is totally beside the point. You're trying to figure out what this thing is. We're just getting caught up in our concepts and juggling our concepts and overlooking the actual direct experience, going deeper and deeper into confusion. Joshi wants to point this out to his monks. One time Joshi was asked, why is there dust? And Joshi said, it comes from outside. And the monk asked Joshi, well, this is a pure and clean monastery, completely pure. Why is there dust in here? And then at that very moment, a piece of dust kind of was blowing across the floor, a little dust bunny moving along across the floor. And Joshi pointed to it and said, here comes another one. So the person who asked this question had a kind of an idea that this is a, you know, there was a dichotomy between purity and impurity. But ultimately, you can't find a dichotomy between purity and impurity. Yes, we can talk about pure and impure, and conventionally we can speak about pure situations and impure situations. But ultimately, you can't find a dichotomy between pure and impure. That what our practice is to take care of this reality without being caught by the belief that purity and impurity are in a dichotomous relationship, and realize that everything we encounter is a manifestation of this inherently pure, true reality, which is our true life. But still, conventionally speaking, it looks like there's dust and it blows in from the outside. You know, conventionally speaking, and we take care of that. But we don't attach to the idea one-sided, well, this is the complete picture of how things are, that there is a dichotomy between pure and impure, and that dust is something bad, needs to be, disrespected. The way to respect everything is to take care of it as it is. And we need to take care of dust as it is. We need to take care of beautiful, clean situations as they are. without being caught by our ideas about it, without overlooking our direct experience of what's going on. So anyway, could people hear me? Could people hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, I'm glad of that. My for some reason my mask kept falling down and my glasses were fogging up, and that it really kind of made me lose my momentum. Not that I had that much to begin with, but it was anyway.
I didn't notice.
What's that?
I didn't notice.
Oh, thank you. It was very kind of you. So, any questions from anybody? Or comments? Or yes.
I love the way we do the stories that are so often told about the koans. You really, to me, you really bring them to life. It's a joy hearing you talk about them.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, they're... I just touched on them very, very briefly, and it's possible to go into them a lot more. So they're interesting. Some of these stories are very interesting, and at least I find them so. But thank you for your kind words. Was that you, Peter?
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Good to hear from you, Peter.
Good to be here, too. Did you hear me?
Yeah. Oh, good.
Shut up.
I probably should, too. Well, thank you very much for coming today, and... So, all of you have a good day. It's a very beautiful day here in Minneapolis, and I hope it's a good day wherever you may be, in whatever part of the world you may be. So, thank you all very much for coming.
Thank you. Let us recite the four vows. To save all sentient beings, though they are numberless, to give liberation from all desires, though they are inexhaustible, to learn the teachings, though they are boundless, to live the good way, though it is unsurpassable.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.